Welcome to the Cowbell Fever podcast, coming at you fast and furious now. Today we have a conversation with Berkey director Ben Pop. Well, that auto-corrected to Ben Pope, Ben Pop, about the 2024 race experience, 2025 preparations, contingencies, snowmaking, and other fun and interesting tidbits. We're also sponsored again this year by Pioneer Midwest Race Wax Service. As I get older, spending the night before the race on my feet, breathing in whatever non-fluorocarbons I brush up off my skis, is not really my preferred race prep. And this year I'll be lugging around a 4-month-old too, so I don't also want to lug around a wax box and iron. Instead, I'll be trusting my skis to Matt and the pros at Pioneer Midwest. Use the promo code COWBELL at checkout when you're signing up for a few dollars off. We've talked with Matt and his team back in episodes 27 and 43 if you want to dig into the archives and hear more about their waxing philosophy for fast skis. Remember, the promo code is COWBELL when checking out at pioneermidwest.com so they know we sent you. Also a reminder that the podcast does have a Patreon, which when I set up, I use my last name, so patreon.com/offsevet. This is probably actually better than trying to tell people guide, not guy, which is why the podcast name changed. But anyway, I'll spell it out phonetically. Oscar, Foxtrot, Sierra, Echo, Victor, India, Tango. And new this year, if we do get 10 people to sign up as Patreons or patrons or whatever they call them, for as little as $1 per month, I'll get branded Cowbell Fever novelty cowbells made up so we can send them out. And anyone who's a previous patron will send those to you too, and thanks for your previous support. The minimum order is such that I can't just order a couple, so that's why we have this sort of like Kickstarter thing going on. Sure, you could stop by the Swix table at the expo and hope they have a cowbell, but don't you want to declare yourself on Main Street loudly that you're a friend of the pod? Again, patreon.com/OFSEVIT. And now on to the podcast. Ben Pop from Berkebeiner, welcome back to the Cowbell Fever podcast. This is, I don't know, the 8th or 9th year probably we've done one of these. I could go back and count, but that's a lot of work. We haven't talked, I think, since last February, and last February was not exactly what we were expecting for the 50th Berkey, but I think the consensus from everyone I talked to was, holy smokes, they pulled it off. Felt like the Berkey may not have been what we expect, but it felt pretty special. So how did that go? What was sort of your viewpoint on last year?
Yeah, well, thanks for having me. It's good to be back, and there's actually a little white stuff on the ground. That's exciting. It's been about 2 years since we've seen that. You know, I mean, Berkey 24, the 50th anniversary, obviously, where there was a lot of excitement and hype going into it. We know there was going to be World Cup skiers there, so that brings just a different level of excitement as well when you have, you know, Jesse Diggins, Gus Schumacher coming off his World Cup win the weekend before in Minneapolis. I mean, that level of excitement was high. You have Ernie completing his 50th, including all 50, of course. So many people, record numbers of skiers, nearly 13,000, over 14,000 for the week when we include all the events. And so it was just something really special going into it, especially even into the fall and preparations. And then, of course, bam, I skied once during the winter, and it was on, wait for it, Halloween. Our biggest snowstorm was on Halloween, 4 inches. You know, we had about 14 inches leading up to the Berkey, but of course, raining on Christmas, rain Berkey week. I mean, it was just so unseasonably warm. So, you know, I mean, everybody I think that was here seen, obviously, just such a huge kudos to certainly the event team as it pivoted, but then, of course, the trails guys, I mean, and all the work that they went into. I mean, there was literally 9 days to make snow last winter really effectively, and they just made it, you know, the mountains of it. And I remember when they said, hey, let's turn the snow guns on in January, I'm like, dudes, that's a waste of time and money. And thank God they didn't listen to me. So then we get to building this course, and, you know, of course, everybody wanted to end up in downtown Hayward. That's such an electric moment. But then what actually happened was sort of the lemonade showed up out of the lemons. And the fact that you had this super close, intimate 11K course that you got to see skiers multiple times, a little bit more of a relaxed atmosphere in that you weren't, you know, it was an open track. Multiple days, so people might ski on Wednesday, then they could be free to drink beer and hang out all weekend long and cheer. You know, you get to see the best skiers in the world going round and round. And so it was what started out as being really scary and, oh, this is going to be terrible, ended up with just unbelievably electric moments, probably obviously highlighted by the elite race on Saturday with the World Cup skiers at stake, and it was just something else. And then you sort of wrap that up with all the history of Ernie and the Wise family here, and just it was a really special week of skiing, and even more than skiing, just celebrating the Berkey fever for the last 50 years. And so if you weren't there, I will say I think you missed something really, really cool. But the flip side is we're saying now, well, this is like 1973. This is year one of the next 50. So hopefully we'll get a chance to see everybody up here in the Northwoods in just a couple weeks.
Yeah, one of the things last year as a sort of, I'm in the elite wave. I actually went up to ski the Gatineau last year because I usually don't want to do all the travel right before the Berkey, but since it sort of didn't count for anything, it was a great excuse to, you know, from where I am, make that 7-8 hour drive up to Gatineau. We skied that 50K skate race in a blinding blizzard, kind of like the storm in 2021.
Yeah.
So I just, you know, with icicles coming off my face and about 4 inches of snow during the race. So that was not a fast race. That was a long race. I was tired. I was not about to compete in the elite race. But for the folks in the Midwest, that was pretty much the only race around. So people took it real seriously. And to put everyone out there, and then, you know, you had everyone skiing the Berkey, either had just skied or was about to ski. So you had a World Cup atmosphere. And let me tell you that when I got lapped by Jesse Diggins 2 or 3 laps into the race, I was one of the first people probably she passed. I said, this is my time. I gave them about 10 meters, and then I put on a full-on sprint to stay up because we were coming into the stadium, and there were 10,000 people cheering for me.
Right?
And probably Jesse Diggins. So, you know, she didn't, and awesome. The thing is, you know, she has that story about trying to ski the Berkey and being unable to when she skied the Coeur d'Alope 20 years ago,
right.
And she still hasn't gotten to ski the Berkey, but that was almost, it's such a different experience, but to have those crowds, to have those skiers, and I think for everyone else who skied, you know, you're not out in the woods alone. I think there was one little section on the backside where I almost thought to myself, oh, I can ease up here, no one's watching, but the rest of the time, you're just with people the whole time, from the drummers at 1K, and then there was like two little sections where it was quiet. So, you know, yeah. It felt like the Berkey, that was a hard course. We thought, oh, it's going to be flat. Even those backfields, they weren't flat. And we're probably going to have to use this at some point in the next 50 years, but we're not going to have 2002s, 2007s, 2017s, 2000s, and then some back in the 90s and 80s too, where we have this option going forward, which is great because, you know, to come up to the Berkey and know that you're going to ski a race like that just makes it so much better.
Yeah, I mean, I think ultimately, you know, it's a big part of most people's seasons. And, you know, we just had the Sealy Hills Classic this last weekend, but again, because it's been a very low snow year. It was back up at Cable on about a 5.5K loop. And we added a skate race on Sunday, and it was actually snowing quite hard. It's the one snow we had now, and then so now we have snow on the ground. Snowing hard during the race. And I tell you, the excitement and energy of that group was about 300 people with the high school kids. The excitement was so high, not because they were out racing, because I think they felt like they were with their tribe. It's snowing. It's just that unbelievable energy that we literally didn't have all last year up until the one race at the Berkey in the Midwest anyways, because there was no snow. And so I just think that we all thrive on each other's energy of love for the sport and being outside and active, and, you know, being unable to get together in some of these years is really hard. And so, you know, I think last year was certainly a celebration. It was awesome to have the World Cup in Minneapolis and then have the Berkey in sort of its unique fashion. But I think we all are looking forward to getting back to the days of, you know, some sort of normal, quote unquote, normal skiing, if you will, where we get to take off and head down the trail. I mean, this year, Sisu Ski Fest was canceled, right? I mean, that's in Ironwood. That's in Ironwood, where
yep.
It is the snow capital of the Midwest for sure, you know, outside of maybe Houghton. And, you know, again, I think sort of there is definitely some trepidation around, all right, what's going to happen to Mother Nature here in winter? We really want it and love it. Ultimately, knowing that, all right, in some way, shape, or form, we're going to have a Berkey. We're going to put something together that's going to bring the community together is important. And, you know, it's, I mean, I think you look at even like our capital campaign, having raised nearly $10 million that we're working really hard to try and finish up. You look at the amount of people that have supported that, and of course, I think that you support things you believe in and you want to be a part of, but also knowing that, hey, I'm helping, I want to be a part of a solution that enables a race like the Berkey to happen for the next 50 years and then generations to come. It might look different, but I want to make sure my kids, my grandkids, my great-grandkids all get to experience this Berkey fever in some way, shape, or form, even if it ends up being on a 15K loop for the 5 out of the next 6 years or something, or whatever, right? And so it really, it's something else, obviously. And it, you know, if you haven't been to Telmark yet, as many obviously that have been, and but it's, there's the other part of it is that, yeah, it's on these loops, but there's so much history there too, right? It's not like you're, and I think yeah. Ernie talked about that a bunch. I mean, you ski through a hotel lobby, you go through the old World Cup trails. Here's where Bill Koch was. Here was the very first World Cup start and finish. All those kind of things, I think, really exude a ton of excitement and memories and history and nostalgia that just make it even that much more special, I think. So that's the fun part about this. And even we're rebuilding the museum right now up at in the new building. And, boy, just rifling through some of that old stuff of Marty Hall and Sven Wiik and John Caldwell and Billy Koch and Tony and all the things that happened in the ski world in the 70s that, I don't know, I didn't really realize how what role Tony and Telmark played. And he loved it. You could tell he was really into it. You know, you read some of these stories from Caldwell and Wiik and Marty Hall, and you know, they were all like, man, this dude's crazy. He just keeps doing more and more. And, you know, I think he truly had a love for the sport and wanted to be, you know, a positive influence. So
I want to say it was 7 or 8 years ago that we had Marty Hall on the podcast. That was really good. Good episode. I haven't gone back and listened to it. I probably should in my copious spare time. I was going to ask what you learned from last year. You know, and I think one of those things is if the snowmakers say, let's make snow, is say yes.
Yeah.
But what else? What would you change, do differently? You know, what are the contingency plans for this
year? Funny you should say that. We just literally had a meeting about 2 hours ago on, okay, here we are on mid-January. Where are we? What do we think next steps are? What are the 4 or 5 contingency plans? And I think we learned a lot about our snow production capabilities and what are our limitations, how effectively we can and can't move snow around the area, and what are some of those limitations based mostly on terrain, because it's really hard to move dump trucks around really steep hills. But then also flow of people. You know, a lot of times from the Berkey standpoint, you have people and cable, and you know, you spread them out over 17 miles as the crow flies, but they're scattered everywhere, versus what happens when now I'm going to shove upwards of 25,000 people in one spot. And what can we do better there, differently there? What is the feedback we got of how people like watching it or didn't like watching it? What the skiers liked and didn't like? So I would say that, you know, I really, as we start to think about contingency plans, of course, number one, we know that there's great ice on Lake Hayward right now. It's, you know, no snow and a lot of cold weather. But the ultimately, that is the number one goal. But then certainly we know, as we've talked about previously, we have that natural loop course up north with the Skate and Classic trails that we can double back on like we used in 21. And that snow is actually just, I wouldn't say significantly better, but definitely better. There's a classic, if to put it in context, there's a classic track from 00 North right now. From 00 to Gravel Pit, it's pretty good skating. South of Gravel Pit, quite thin. I skied it from Wheeler and it was, you know, very, very thin. So it just gets thicker as we get north. And so, all right, plan one, we could do a circle Berkey of sorts where we're head to 00 and back on the classic and skate. There's some certain limitations there, but doable. Then you shorten it even further north. Hey, let's use some snowmaking loops. The old Cordy Trail is now in play. We had a very generous donor that was able to help us purchase that old Cordy Trail, to the Telmark property so that we were going to be able to preserve that forever. So we could use the old Cordy Trail when it used to loop back to Telmark. So there's some tighter loop options up north that would get us to like 18 and 20 kilometer loops that maybe, you know, it's a 1 lap, 2 lap, 3 lap or whatever that works out to be. And then of course, then you're,
oh, you want to make us ski 60K, well, don't you?
Okay. Maybe we'll go to a little bit less, but, and then certainly the only on snowmaking loops right now, we just pushed out another kilometer. So we're probably at about almost 7K on the ground skiable. And, you know, now we've also learned trucking is very, very expensive. And so also looking at, okay, how can we better strategically place our snow piles, to make it slower and easier trucking So right now, I think we're feeling pretty good about some different options. Our snow guns, we were going to start them up actually this weekend after we have Ski to Chic coming up, which is going to be amazing. Hundreds and hundreds of women up here skiing. It's just going to be awesome. Carrie Tollefson's actually kind of the keynote speaker, which will be really, really cool. She's getting into skiing and obviously an amazing distance athlete and role model. And I think we've now decided to delay snow gun production or bringing the snow guns back out and starting production until January 28th. We'll get through the tour, and then it looks like we still have really pretty quite cold weather at that point. And that gives us within 3 weeks that we know it takes about a week of snow production, a week of moving snow, and that gives us a week of flex in there. So, worst case scenario, we're looking at the end of January of firing our guns back up. And with the goal of trying to get to a 1 lap Prince Hokan, 2 lap Gordie, 3 lap Berkey in the neighborhood of 15K lap. So trying to extend from what we did last year. And I think, of course, trying to ensure that it's a timed event. You know, last year was open track. We had to do that from a safety standpoint because of the compression. But we've started to run some more. The folks from Georgia Tech that we've done a bunch of modeling with, we've done a little bit more again. And we're really having the goal of wanting to have the Berkey, both classic and skate, on Saturday. So we know that's in the upwards of 7,000 skiers. What does that look like on a 15K loop and classic and skate and all those things that go into it? But it's just part of the Berkey fever part of it, right? And the energy. And that's what we really want to strive for. So that's, I think, what we're hoping to get to. If we have to get to worst case scenario, but again, ask me in 2 weeks and it's probably changed again. But I think the trails crew and the event staff is really working hard to make sure that is where we end up for sure.
Now, next week you're looking at temperatures down to 20, 25 below and highs well below zero. Is that the kind of weather you can make snow in, but is it so cold that it makes it difficult?
Yeah, you know, believe it or not, that's a little too cold. It's really hard on the stuff once it gets about 10 below or colder. And so for us, ideally is like five degrees Fahrenheit down to minus 10. That is like the sweet spot. Colder than that, it's just really, really hard on the equipment. And we've had freeze ups, especially on some of those small orifices. And you know, one of our issues, I can put our plug in for fundraising, is you know, all of our water lines are still above ground, and it's just super, it makes them labor intensive, but then also that much more vulnerable. And so we're one of our next goals as we start to get into some more of our fundraising is to bury a couple of our water mains such that even when it is really cold, we can continue to run. And the other part is that we use Tony's old snowmaking wells. We haven't drilled any wells. And so we're fortunate to be able to sort of that reduce, reuse, recycle. He had all these high cap wells from his snowmaking, but we are still just using groundwater. We aren't using a pond. And so that means it's 52 degrees, right? 53 or whatever groundwater is. And so that's why for us, optimal is when it gets colder, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7 degrees as opposed to 20. And so an investment in a cooling tower is definitely in the works for us as well in the future. But, you know, we get those kind of temps. We have 7 guns. We're effectively bringing about 500 or so gallons per minute we can push. You know, it takes us at that point about a day to make a kilometer, 18 inches, 25 feet wide.
Is the river too far away to tap into, and also the National Scenic Riverway, or how many constraints do you have there?
Yeah, well, you know, we've looked into that. It is about 1,200 feet away, and actually kind of across, believe it or not, towards the airport. Kind of to the north is where the Nemacogin is closest. It is a little shallow there, and so there is a little fear of, you know, it's only about 3 feet deep, about pulling up a lot of silt, because a lot of times they like to be able to suspend that. But you know, the ground or the water, you know, in the area, it's just super, super sandy, obviously, in the Nemacogin River Valley. And so the river's a little bit far, but we, like I said, we are super fortunate to have all these wells that Tony had done. And whether we use a cooling tower or there's actually 2 overflow ponds that are clay lined that were from the old septic system that is no longer used. They were never part of the septic system. They were actually overflow ponds in case of emergency. So we are at, and one's actually right by the start, and they each hold about 800,000 gallons. So the other option is to use our wells to fill the ponds and then pull out of the ponds, because then you're dealing with, of course, cooled water. Versus like the low pit, we're similar to that where they are using a cooling tower. The advantage being then it's clean water, because once you put the water in the pond, it's dirty, and then it plugs the orifices pretty quickly oftentimes. So, but we'll see.
Nothing makes it easy.
exactly. You know what the easiest is? When you just go outside and it's snowing, you're like, yes!
It comes out of the sky. So you sort of had a surprise storm last week where it was like 1 or 2 inches and you got six. I know you like the wet, heavy, dense snow, not exactly the kind of snow you wanted, but something's better than nothing.
Ah, absolutely, I tell you. And the parking lot was full today at 00, meaning it's totally skiable and people are jazzed about being out on, you know, because you could drive an extra 10 minutes and be at Telmark and be on 6 kilometers or 7 kayak, beautiful. But that's old, man. That is old, old, old. People have been doing that for 2 years. And so the idea of, even though it's thin, the fact that you can get out on the trail and rip is really cool. And, you know, north of 00, we had about 1.5 inches of really hard ice down that was still there after the rain. So then this 6 inches that we got, even though it was light and fluffy, yep. It, you know, it really had stuff underneath it locked up already.
And it bonded. It wasn't sheer ice.
Bingo. And so it's really not bad. Now, could you raise 7,000 people over? Yeah, probably not. You know, I mean, just the durability of it is the fear there. But I tell you, 4, 5, 6 inches, I think I would be willing to put my head out and say, yeah, I think we're going to go at that point in time because it really isn't that good a shape underneath. And so I think, you know, everyone is super hypersensitive right now because of blotcher being so bad. But percentages say you're a data guy. I mean, percentages got to say that at some point in time, we're going to get some snow.
And there's some years, I want to say maybe 2008, 2009, where there was no big storms. There was a couple inches here and there. But, it, you know, if, as long as you get a little of that and it adds up and doesn't melt, a little moisture into it, you can, you guys keep the course up so well that you can
run a good race. And like today it's 31, tomorrow 33. Actually is really starting to compress that snow that is there, putting a little moisture in it. And then, of course, and like you say, it's going to get down to high of -9, low of -23, -24. I was on a call with Swix yesterday, Norway, and I was saying, oh, man, it's really cold here. It's going to be -20. And they're thinking -20°C. I'm like, oh, no, actually, that would be in the Fahrenheit scale.
Yeah. Oh, no.
And I said, I know, we're weird. We haven't quite figured out the metric system over here in the U.S. We're a bit slow. I get it. But and they said, wait a second.
But if it gets down to -40, it doesn't matter. It's the same thing
right,
either
exactly.
way.
Exactly. So if we can get to -40, then we can all relate.
So let's say that we got enough snow. We have a full course. We finish in Hayward. It feels like the old days. Is there anything new, exciting that we can look forward to that you're planning this year?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think it's going to be, not to sound ho-hum, a kind of a quote-unquote normal Berkey. I think, you know, we all want to get back to skiing from Cable to Hayward. Like I say, it's kind of year one of the next 50 years. So if you want to see that that picture 50 years from now, like that one that you saw last year of the 35 lined up, and you want to be part of year one of 50, second 50, well, you better be here. And, you know, I think there's some slight modifications that are happening with a few routes and the classic trail up north, just slight things that most people actually won't even notice. A little refinement of the downtown, how baggage works. And a Hayward High School, actually, you might remember, was under construction last year. And so there's going to be a whole different flow of that in the expo because they had passed a referendum and were building a new gym and totally renovating the high school. So that's going to feel different for everybody. It's a whole new school, so to speak. So that'll be kind of cool.
Yeah.
Cool just to have experience flow a little bit better now. We have more space. And
Sons of Norway will still have the cookies out, though.
Let's hope so. Because, I mean, if they don't have the cookies, what do you got?
So, yeah. So anything you're really looking forward to about this year?
Yeah. No, I think, hey, at the end of the day, I just can't wait to get people back on snow. And hopefully we can ski them into downtown Hayward. You know, it was interesting. I was down in Madison just yesterday and was fortunate to have a meeting with the governor. And he asked, well, what's the snow like up there? Is it going to be awesome? And I said, of course it's going to be awesome. And he said, all right, well, tell him. And we actually shot a little video. And like, you got to welcome everybody to the state, your great state of Wisconsin here. They're coming from every state and, you know, all the countries around the world. So I think from my standpoint, it's such a celebration of the sport and being active and that getting people here and just what it brings to their lifestyle and is so important to have that highlight of the year and coming together and walking down Main Street and all those pieces is important. And so I think we're going to continue to do our snow dances up here in the Northwoods and get ready to hopefully host the world here in northern Wisconsin in 5 weeks, I suppose, at this point
five
in time.
Five weeks from Saturday.
So I don't know what your training plan looks like, but I don't know how much you can cram in 5 weeks, but this is your five. We should tell people you got 5 weeks.
Yeah, well, Ben, thank you so much for coming on and chatting, and probably try to check in with you before the race. Hopefully we'll
That would be awesome.
some good news. And we'll see you in just over a month.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. Let's check in as it gets closer, and hope training goes well out east, and we look forward to seeing you up here in the Northwoods soon.
Thanks for listening, and for those interested, the Marty Hall podcast was even deeper in the archives than the Pioneer Midwest ones, all the way back in episode 11, back in the fall of 2017. That means that this podcast is about to celebrate its 9th anniversary since the first podcast episode was January of 2016. So thanks for listening, and thanks again to Pioneer Midwest Race Wax Service. Remember to use Cowbell when checking out at pioneermidwest.com. And thanks to anyone who signs up at patreon.com/offsevit. That's patreon.com/OFSEVIT. If we do get those 10 signups, we'll get cowbells for everyone. Shout out, as usual, to Catherine Carlson for fiddling our theme song and also for throwing a heck of a Three Kings party this year. As always, at that party, she did say something about coming back on the Berkey one of these years. So, Catherine, we'll see you in Wisconsin soon. Thanks, and we'll be back with another episode soon.